Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
I hope your Tuesday is going well as we get closer to the Thanksgiving holiday. It's Tuesday, November 24th, and just a reminder, we will be off for the holiday weekend, but we'll still be with you on the air. We'll have a special programming for the weekend, and hope you can stay tuned for that. Doug Keck will be back with me a week from Friday about all the wonderful programs that they are going to be having in the next coming weeks with Advent and Christmas and Epiphany and all that. And speaking of programs, we have one of the very well-known hosts and guests on EW10, different radio programs, Father Robert Spitzer, coming up. I am so excited. I told Doug that their show, Father Spitzer's Universe, that Doug hosts with Father Spitzer, is one of my favorites. I just love listening to him, both of them, but Father Spitzer, in terms of the way he answers the questions that Doug raises, and his wisdom and his insight, his knowledge on the faith. But he's brilliant and has many, many degrees. I've lost count of how many. He just explains the faith, I think, in a way, although he's very deep, in a way that we all can understand. He gets to the heart of the matter, and that's actually what we're going to be talking about today. He has a new book out, his latest from our friends at Ignatius Press, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives. Wow. The cosmic struggle between good and evil. And I think, and this is just my personal opinion, that we are seeing so much out there in the sense of how Satan has blinded so many people to the reality of the situation on so many levels, whether you're talking about abortion, whether you're talking about the issue of marriage, whether you're just talking about reality and truth in general. Everything is turned on its head, and you have to be in the Word of God and praying every day and making sure you're receiving the sacraments in order to be able to see it. It is everywhere. And to me, it seems as if, we see in Ephesians about the armor of God, it seems like the arrows are just flying back and forth, boom, 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 to the point where, wow, I think it's at a level that we haven't seen before, at least in our lifetime. But we'll talk with Father Robert Spitzer, and when he joins us at about 15 minutes past the hour. Again, the book is Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, The Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. And so his goal in this book is to really help us recognize spiritual evil and overcome it. And it's divided into two main parts: the realities of God's goodness and of spiritual evil, and recognizing and overcoming diabolical tactics, which range from temptation and deception to the deadly sins. So I wish we had like 3 hours to talk about this, and maybe we'll have to have him back on because I have so many questions. So looking forward to that interview. I hope you are as well. Father Spitzer coming up at about 15 minutes past the hour, or maybe even sooner if we can get him on a few minutes early. And then we're going to be speaking with our wonderful friends, Julie and Greg Alexander, who do so much good in marriage, and talk about seeing evil that happens in terms of breaking up relationships and families. They are on the front lines in that spiritual battle, but they also have such good news to report as well, how God is performing miracles in the lives of couples, and they'll share some stories and also give us some ideas on how do we navigate the holidays. It's always a tense time, right? Especially when people get together with people they haven't seen in a while. Now, it may be different this year because of COVID restrictions, depending on where you're living. But even so, the holidays usually add a level of stress. And it's not always the most wonderful time of the year for everyone, you know, like that Christmas carol always says. But we will talk with that about that topic with Julie and Greg Alexander of the Alexander House. They are marriage coaches, they are authors, they are speakers and retreat leaders, and they do a fantastic job, and they join us at 39 minutes past the hour. Right now, though, without further ado, let's get to the news, because I want to spend as much time as humanly possible today with our wonderful guests, including off the top, after we're done with our interviews, after we're done with our news, Father Spitzer. So let's see what's happening in the world. 4 minutes past the hour. It is Tuesday, November 24th. Archbishop Michael Miller of Vancouver expressing disappointment, as Catholic News Agency reports, with the government's decision to ban religious services as part of a plan to curb the coronavirus in British Columbia. During Mass at Holy Rosary Cathedral in Vancouver, Miller saying religious institutions are not being treated fairly compared to other establishments. Later on, in an interview with the Archdiocese, he reiterated those comments in the interview that was posted on the website.
What surprised me is that bars remained open and some other indoor activities, which I understand for certain segments of the population could be considered essential. And so it was a little surprising, actually not a little, it was quite surprising that our religious activities inside the church, when we have been observing all of the protocols, that these were, in a sense, singled out for being discontinued temporarily. It was a disappointment, and I was surprised.
During his homily at Mass on Sunday, Archbishop Miller also saying no evidence has been forthcoming to help the local church understand why worship in Catholic churches must be curtailed from its current status so as not to put a strain on our health care system. He said it's a very serious matter to restrict religious members from public worship, and he pointed to the rights protected under Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms, saying while measures should be taken to ensure public safety, the burden cannot rest on communities of faith alone. The state of New York suing the Diocese of Buffalo and its former bishops for failing to protect children for clergy sex abuse, they're alleging. New York's attorney general filing a lawsuit yesterday in the state's Supreme Court against the diocese. The state alleges that the diocese failed to properly investigate claims of clergy sex abuse and also claims diocesan leadership did not refer unassignable priests to the Vatican, monitor priests with credible accusations, or take necessary action against diocesan priests credibly accused of child sex abuse. A man suspected in a deadly California church stabbing spree now under arrest. A man and a woman were killed late Sunday night and three others hurt at the Grace Baptist Church in East San Fernando. Police say all five victims were associated with the homeless shelter inside the church. The three survivors are reported in serious but stable condition. At this point, there is no word on the motive. Dean Muccio tells us the U.S. Coast Guard is still trying to find four fishermen whose boat sank off the Massachusetts coast.
The crew was aboard the 82-foot Emmy Rose, which sank about 20 miles northeast of Provincetown early Monday morning. When search crews first arrived on the scene, they found debris and an empty life raft. Several Coast Guard vessels and a chopper are searching for the crew.
In New York City, Bob Brown tells us that residents will notice more police on the subways.
Mayor de Blasio says the NYPD will be increasing their presence along platforms and at underground stations following an increase in subway pushing incidents.
We got to make sure that New Yorkers have confidence that they can go and use the subway and know help will be there for them. So NYPD is going to be increasing its presence in the subways. That will be very visible.
Three people were recently pushed onto the tracks in Manhattan and Brooklyn, which the mayor attributes to mental health issues. Two of the subway attacks, a panhandler and a homeless man, were arrested.
One of the few surviving Tuskegee Airmen has passed away in Colorado Springs. Frank Macon died at his home Sunday night. He served in the Civil Air Patrol at the beginning of World War II and eventually enlisted in the Army Air Corps, where he became part of the pioneering group of African-American pilots. He was 97 years old. And Scott Pringle tells us New York City is mourning the loss of former Mayor David Dinkins.
Dinkins served as a Marine, a state assemblyman, and Manhattan's borough president before being elected New York's first black mayor in 1989.
I am frankly very proud of what we were able to do, not because of me, but because of the persons with whom I was privileged to work.
Dinkins passed away last night after reportedly being found unresponsive at his Lenox Hill apartment. He apparently died of natural causes. He was 93.
President Trump is promising to continue challenging the election results. On Twitter, the president saying he is not abandoning a number of lawsuits filed in an effort to find out if fraud took place. Trump also saying he would never concede to what he referred to as fake ballots. South Florida hotels are nearing sellouts for the first time since March. Cynthia Boyette with the Ritz-Carlton South Beach saying they have several last-minute bookings and could be at full occupancy by the weekend.
Probably going to be one of the best weekends we've seen since the beginning of the pandemic. It's certainly not anywhere near to where we were last year. This time last year, we were selling out.
And she also says there's a new coronavirus-related trend. Guests are booking for much longer stays.
And a lot of these guests are now staying with us 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, even 3 months. So really making a plan for the winter season to be here for an extended period of time.
Countywide, Miami-Dade in Florida usually logs an 87% occupancy rate over Thanksgiving. This year, it's about 40%. Everything is allowed on the plate this Thanksgiving. Nicole McLaughlin is a registered dietitian, and she says it's okay to celebrate with all the traditional fixings and goodies, but just don't overdo it.
Make sure that you're celebrating Thanksgiving one time. So be careful what you bring home with you as far as leftovers. Don't pack enough to feed you for the week.
And she says, fill that plate with your favorite food, but avoid the second helpings. And finally, in our news, at about 10 minutes past the hour on this Tuesday, November 24th of Thanksgiving week, the owl found inside, as Lisa G reports, the Rockefeller Christmas tree, not quite ready to fly the coop.
The Ravensbeard Wildlife Center in Saugerties, which has been caring for Rockefeller the owl, say they're still examining him. They had planned to let him fly into the wild this past Saturday. However, they're working on a plan to release him safely. The tiny adult male saw-whet owl was discovered dehydrated and hungry by a worker setting up the 75-foot Norway spruce in front of 30 Rockefeller Plaza. The owl apparently came along for the ride as the tree made its way to Midtown from upstate Oneonta, some 200 miles away.
11 minutes past the hour. Hope your Tuesday is a good one so far, and wishing you an early happy Thanksgiving. We'll be on the air with you again tomorrow, good Lord willing, and then off for the holiday weekend. Upcoming after the break, we're going to be chatting with the one, the only, Father Robert Spitzer. What a brilliant, brilliant gift to the church. He's a wonderful priest, teacher, writer, speaker, and his latest book, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, A Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil, published by our friends at Ignatius Press. You'll also find it, of course, on our EWTN religious catalog. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Religious freedom and healthcare and the right to life are under the greatest attack in American history. Right now, Catholic healthcare and the pro-life movement hang in the balance. My name is Lewis Brown, Executive Director of the Christ Medicus Foundation, and we are leading a new movement to defend religious freedom and civil rights in healthcare and to build the culture of life. We need your help now more than ever. Join this movement. Go to religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org. That's religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
So excited to have Father Al with us. Just think the world of him. He's such a great communicator and theologian. You know him from the great program on EWTN, Father Spitzer's Universe, with our very own Doug Keck as well. Father Spitzer, PhD, former president of Gonzaga University, the founder of the Magis Center, educating the public about the intersection of science, reason, and faith, chief education officer of the Ethics and Performance Institute, which delivers web-based ethics education to corporations and individuals. And he's also the president of the Spitzer Center for Ethical Leadership, delivering similar curricula to nonprofit organizations. The author of Healing the Culture, Five Pillars of the Spiritual Life, and 10 Universal Principles, as well as this book from Ignatius Press, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, The Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. Father, great to have you on the program again.
Oh, great to be back with you, Teresa.
All right, so what prompted this book? Because, boy, do I have a lot of questions for you, just to let you know.
just in Jesus' words, the signs of the time. I mean, I just finally, I've been planning a book basically on suffering and evil. I was going to combine the two. And then as I began to take a look around me and just see, just manifestations of the culture slipping into really a kind of a darkness and almost doing it unconsciously and in such a huge scale, and just especially the disregard for life issues, the disregard too for just normal sexual mores, that the disregard for respect even in civil discourse. I mean, I just began to think to myself, boy, this has so many of the earmarks of Satan, and bring the name right out there, and his ways of doing things, and you know, and especially the unconscious dimension of, you know, our lapse into darkness. And so I just thought, well, you know, that sounds like C.S. Lewis's book. You probably remember that wonderful classic, The Screwtape Letters,
right?
Where Screwtape is counseling his young devil. Screwtape's a devil, and his younger nephew Wormwood is kind of a novice devil, and he's sort of telling him how to deal with this patient, quote unquote, a person who's sort of thinking about God, could come closer to God. That, of course, is characterized as the enemy. And so as he is doing this, he says, you know, whatever you do, please don't let him start to think of our reality. If he gets into that mood, the patient gets into that mood, why, just simply tantalize him in some way. And if that doesn't work, why, portray us as a cartoon character wearing red tights and having horns and a trident. But if that doesn't work, tempt him with something of sensorial, like lunch. And I just thought to myself, yeah, that's, we've really succumbed. And so I thought, well, I'm going to write a book, and I'm just going to talk about what Jesus told us from the beginning, what great classic writers, St. Benedict, St. Ignatius of Loyola have expounded on, you know, St. Teresa of Avila have expounded on, you know, in very, very deep ways. I just thought, I'm just going to bring out the old classic in contemporary life and point out, you know, how does the devil work, his presence and so forth. But
yeah,
I wanted to begin with Christ's grace first and foremost.
Absolutely. Chatting with Father Robert Spitzer, his latest book, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, is from Ignatius Press, a subtitle, The Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. Father, the other thing that I see, and maybe it's because of my background as a journalist, where we're supposed to deal with facts and reality, is this denial of reality, of reality being put forth in one area, and then lies being, complete lies and upside-down world being put forth in another realm, where we've got these two things going on. And and when you're talking about, I mean, you can look at anything. You could look at abortion. You could look at the marriage issue. You could look at what's happening, you know, and you mentioned that these other sexual issues. But I'm just talking even in the reality of the world in terms of the way news is presented. Reality is presented as fiction, and fiction is presented as reality.
Yeah, that's one of the classic signs of the evil spirit, as Jesus says. He was a liar from the beginning, and that is, he's a murderer, and you know, abortion, etc. You know, and he goes through and he talks about the deceits of the devil, and no one does it better than St. Ignatius of Loyola in his Discernment of Spirit. He has a series of rules for the discernment
of spirit.
And in that those rules, he says,
you know, how tricky, you know, the evil spirit can be, how he has many levels of deceit. For somebody who is spiritually uninitiated, he just comes out and says, you know, lie like the dickens, right? That's the main rule. We're not here. Black is white. White is black. And you ought to believe this. And if it's convenient and consistent with temptations, when a person is uninitiated, and so many people in the culture today are virtually uncatechized, and you know, their relationship with God is loose at best, you know, kind of light and loose at best. When that's happening, the devil has very easy prey. He can just come in with an outright lie, and just because it's convenient, it kind of is consistent with a rationalization that you want to sort of put forward, etc. And you know, he can kind of push this. You know, he knows he can get you right away, right? He can sort of, if you want to believe the lie, he's got many of them for you. And so in chapter 4, I talk about this at some length in the book, because the deceits are so remarkably well done. And then in the chapters on the deadly sins, you know, I point out, you know, definitely all of the deadly sins in contemporary movies have been extolled. You know, Wall Street's Gordon Gekko so wonderfully, you know, portraying Gekko, right? You know, obviously mm-hmm. this diabolical person who's trying to, you know, literally seduce Bud into a life of abject criminality on Wall Street. And so what he's doing, and you know, as he comes before his board of directors, and he begins with this line, "Greed, for lack of a better term, is good."
Good.
Mm-hmm. And he begins to talk about greed being good. And, of course, all the definite movie lines we've got about pride being wonderful. I mean, you know, Sunset Avenue, you know, in, you know, that wonderful movie about this poor woman who, in her vanity, mm-hmm. Murders a fellow at the end. I don't want to ruin everything for people, but, you know, at the end of the day, we see in today's culture every single deadly sin is either excused or extolled.
And those who stand up against it are attacked.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that just says evil, evil, evil all over it. And people are so willing to believe. I mean, it's like out of the book of Revelations. People are
right.
Just like lemmings, and they're following. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to give a book over to this. I'm going to spend chapter 4 talking about how he deceives. There's a second level of deceit, which may be a little bit more to go through today if we have the time. But in any case, these deceits are so prolific. I mean, it has not just the marks of the evil spirit, but we have to resist them as a culture. It's no longer just the Catholic Church. Of course, the Catholic Church has got to be out there. Individual Catholics have to be just on their guard 24/7, for their salvation is being, you know, challenged seriously in this atmosphere. But more than that, the culture itself is being truly seduced into darkness. And this is a real problem that I think if we don't stand up, if we don't wake up and get the sense of how we have been duped, how we have been seduced, how we are in the darkness already, deeply in the darkness,
right,
and turn around, we are going to find that our culture can no longer sustain itself from within. The light of Christ will begin to be eclipsed, and it's not like Christ will condemn the culture. We will say, you know, jointly, I'm not saying everybody in the culture, but a large number in the culture will mm-hmm. say, we're no longer interested in you. And, of course, if we say that in our freedom, the protection of Christ, the light of Christ, the wisdom of Christ, the grace of Christ, the love of Christ, the charity of Christ, and above all, the goodness of Christ will be eclipsed in our lives and in our collective hearts. And if that happens, we are dead on arrival. We're not going to survive because of our own doing. You know, Christ doesn't have to sit there and punish a culture like that.
We make our own choices. Right.
Bent on punishing ourselves. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and if you look at other cultures, what makes us think that we're so special? I mean, Rome, which was so powerful, fell, and for many of the reasons that we're falling right now.
Absolutely, and we don't even have to be students of history. The cards are very easy to read, but we don't want to read them because we want to be deceived. We really want to believe the myth. We really want to go with our central narcissistic and egotistical natures, and we just want to sort of, you know, plunge, you know, into the abyss, and we think there will be no consequences. Well, indeed, there are consequences. There are consequences with our relationships in this life, consequences for our emotional health. I mean, I'm writing a third book in this trilogy right now that just shows that every single one of these church teachings that are so controversial, from artificial birth control to abortion to euthanasia, you violate those, and what happens? Depression goes up, anxiety goes up, you know, substance abuse goes up.
Well, that's exactly what we have right now. I mean, and I'm not just talking during COVID. That was pre-COVID. The numbers are very high. And now, of course, they've skyrocketed. Father, hang on. We'll have more when we come back with Father Robert Spitzer and his latest book. You have to get a copy of it, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, A Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. More with Father Spitzer when we return.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band, and I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child, but I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Who may officiate at a wedding ceremony in the Catholic Church? According to the Catechism, in the Latin tradition, a priest or a deacon are the Church's authorized ministers who preside over the ceremony and receive the consent of the two spouses in the name of the Church and give them the blessing of the Church. It is the presence of the ministers as well as the spouses which visibly expresses the fact that the marriage is an ecclesial reality. The Church normally requires that the faithful contract marriage according to the ecclesiastical form because sacramental marriage is a liturgical act, so it ought to be celebrated in the public liturgy of the Church. Marriage is a state of life in the Church, so certainty about it is a necessity. Preparation for marriage is of prime importance, says the Catechism, citing the example and teaching of parents and families as a special form of this preparation. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
All right, 28 minutes past the hour. I just made an executive decision. I know Julie and Greg will understand. They can join us tomorrow, I'm sure. I want to keep Father on the entire program because I have so many questions, and what he's talking about, brothers and sisters, is so important and pertains directly what's going on in our lives, in our country, in our world right now. We are being deceived, or there are attempts to deceive us every single day, 24/7, in our culture, in the mass media, and we have to understand it, we have to recognize it, and we have to make sure that we are staying close to Christ, close to the sacraments, close to Scripture, because that's the only way you'll be able to see it, is if you're in the Word of God, if you're practicing your faith fervently. Otherwise, you can be deceived very easily. And even some people who have a strong faith can be deceived because we can let our guard down at times. Father, I wanted to talk about, there's a lot of things I want to discuss with you, but I want to talk about some of the, you mentioned some of the tools that the devil uses. How do you see him working right now within the church and deceiving so many people?
Well, I think, first of all, he's done a lot of preparation work, as I would call it. And in chapter 4, I kind of discussed how he's been working since the 1960s in the culture. And, of course, he's, you know, he's a very astute planner. So is God, and the Holy Spirit has also been working to try and get us to awaken prior to, you know, the demise of the culture. And he's raised up for us, you know, likely and unlikely prophets and things of that nature. So the point, though, that I would want to make is, starting in the 60s, you can see that, you know, there was a reversal. The sexual liberation, of course, comes with the birth control pill, Masters and Johnson, so forth and so on, gets right into the educational establishments, and this thing just sweeps the country, right, make love, not war, et cetera. So you see the sweeping of this thing. Then the second thing is the autonomy view of freedom, where freedom is now getting what I want, my strongest urge, done right now, and that's my right. Now, of course, there are tractates on freedom, one of which I have written, you know, that just says this is the wrong view of freedom. But people have forgotten it. It's almost in this blindness and into the educational establishments, again, establishments of higher education, you know, in it went. And freedom became this kind of, I'm a law unto myself. I am who I am by myself. And frankly, it became so Nietzschean in the late 60s and early 70s. And Nietzsche was the one, remember, who said, you know, that God would suppress our freedom. Jean-Paul Sartre takes up this great clarion call and encourages the autonomous view of freedom. God would interfere with our freedom, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these ideas that God has to be put aside, not just other human beings, the interests and the love and the care for other human beings have to be shoved aside so that my autonomous freedom can reign supreme. No, indeed, God has to be shoved aside. If he really did exist, and of course, why did Nietzsche and Sartre in the end deny God? Because it interfered with the autonomous view of freedom. Autonomy just means being a law to myself, the autonomous view of freedom. And so, in a sense, what you're seeing is this sweeps across the country, right? I mean, this is the great preparatory work. I'm not calling it great in the sense of good. I'm calling it, you know, he's done a masterful job of literally seducing the culture into two horrible errors. You know, sexuality was meant to be a gift, you know, to give forth life, to basically bond a couple together in a permanent commitment, in a wonderful, caring, and intimate relationship that gave rise to emotional intimacy, not broke down emotional intimacy in the family. But everything's been turned on its head, as you just so appropriately said it. And now all of a sudden sexuality has become an end in itself. It you know, bonding people together in emotional intimacy toward family and children? Hardly. It's just the opposite. It's just almost, I'm going to use you for the night for myself. And then, of course, since you agreed to be thrown away, well, I'm happy to do so. And so forth and so on. And you look at autonomous view of freedom, and it's just like, we are free. We have our rights. We don't have any responsibilities or duties that accommodate these rights, etc. And so, of course, now the preparation work begins. It begins to sweep the country. It's in the music. It's in the atmosphere. He's got his own little Batman scenario going with the Joker, you know, playing Prince in the background. And people are just cheering and you know, applauding this, going on. And now as he does this, he begins then to take over the media. Slowly but surely, right, we see that censorship rules are adjusted, and of course we don't want to be prudes, you know, all these things. We're mature human beings. We can deal with this. Ha! We cannot deal with it. Our narcissism was just sitting there inflating like there was no tomorrow. And narcissism became, you know, the byword of the culture. Our religion, as narcissism grew, religious attendance started to go down.
Right.
And then when that happened, just take a look, right? You can see these incredible polls, right? You look at this is a poll from 2004 from the American Psychiatric Association and six other very important surveys and studies that had been done that correlate the following. When people lose religious affiliation, so they're comparing non-religious affiliation with religious affiliation, non-religiously affiliated people had significantly, I mean double or more, significantly higher rates of depression, anxiety, substance abuse, impulsivity, antisocial aggressivity, suicides, and suicidal ideation. I'm not kidding you.
Oh, no, it's there. I know. I talk about it in my book, Extreme Makeover, and in my other books as well. I mean, in my book, Me, Myself, and I, the one that you actually endorsed. Yeah. To me, it's just so disturbing because the facts are there, not just the facts in terms of the science, as you just mentioned, the surveys, the science, the research, but in our own lives, our own misery. It's like, who was it, Einstein, who said doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is insanity? But we keep doing it. We keep thinking we can do what we want to do when we want to do it and not suffer the consequences.
Absolutely. And he's got us. He's dangled the reward in front of us. And then, of course, with all of the new drugs, I mean, that was the icing on the cake. He's got us seduced in every way. He's got us sensually seduced. He's got us narcissistically seduced, and now egocentricity and sensuality exceed what I normally call level 3 and 4, right? The contributive, caring, loving view of meaning in life and happiness, and certainly is supplanting the religious, transcendent view, level 4 view of happiness and purpose in life.
Right.
And now we've got a turning, I mean, toward level 1, which is sensual, and level 2, which is egocentric, right, ego-comparative, and we've got this turning toward level 1 and level 2. It is so huge, Teresa.
I know.
That in 15 years, from 2005 to 2017, a dozen years, what you're looking at is an increase. These are teen and young people statistics. Suicides among teens have grown 56%. The depression rate among teens has grown 52%. This is in a dozen years, has grown 52%. And then on top of it, depression among young people has grown 63%.
And that's pre-COVID. Now it's even skyrocketed even further with COVID. Let's take a break, Father. We're going to be interrupted by the satellite break. Let's come back, and we're going to finish out this hour and appreciate Father staying on with us and Julian and Greg agreeing to move to tomorrow. Father Robert Spitzer joining us on his book, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, A Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. I have so many other questions I have to get to after the break. We'll be right back.
Teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching 4 more times over the next 4 verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truth of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Started drinking beer on Saturday nights, sleeping in on Sunday mornings, missing Mass, and it just became a pattern and continued. Without God, I don't know where I'd be right now. I know the importance of the Eucharist. I know the importance of the sacraments that I didn't know at a young age. I follow God's will because my desire is to get to heaven. Our lives are rich and full by being members of the church.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Continuing our conversation with Father Robert Spitzer, latest book, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, A Cosmic Struggle Between Good and Evil. Father, many of the things you spoke about during our last segment, and thank you for staying on with us, and we'll regroup with Julian Gregg tomorrow from the Alexander House, are things that we saw accepted, unfortunately, not officially in church teaching, but among many people who are in positions where they can influence other Catholics, whether it be priests at the pulpit, whether it be folks who are working in diocesan offices, pushing things such as normalization of homosexual relationships, birth control, all these different things. This has been happening for decades in the church. We've seen this. And those who try to stand up against it are you know, attacked or silenced or whatever. We had a situation, and you probably heard of it, Cardinal Collins in Toronto spoke up against the own Catholic school district there, the board, because they refused to read a portion of the catechism pertaining to ministry to homosexual persons or persons with same-sex attractions. And so he wrote a very strong letter and said, look, you're a Catholic. You have to teach the Catholic faith. And so after that letter last week, there was a meeting with the school board, and one woman stood up and she said, you know, I'm just so tired of people telling me that I'm not Catholic because I believe this, that, or the other thing. We have to be sensitive to the LGBTQ agenda. And she wanted, after that letter, she wanted sensitivity training, and she wanted to people to understand that there was systematic homophobia, and this is a direct quote, among the Catholic leadership in that school board in Toronto. Systematic homophobia because of what the church teaches, and she called herself a good Catholic.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, that's when you talk about the deceit and then the sort of layered deceit and the belief in that deceit, it's really unbelievable. I think, honestly, Teresa, we have to stand back from sometimes the political rhetoric and go back to principles and go back to good sociological studies. Essentially, what I did in the third volume of this book, and it's not out yet, but it'll come out in probably midway through next year. But in that third volume, I look at all these issues, and I just say, let's just start with, what is this doing to emotional health? So I went through the there's a series of archives on general psychiatry that are available. And I went through these articles and just looked at, you know, comparisons of both male and female homosexuality, taking a look at depression rates, number of psychiatric incidents, amount of anxiety rates among those people, looking also at substance abuse rates among those people, etc. I mean, there is no question that homosexual lifestyle, it's not homosexuality, that would be same-sex attraction. It's the homosexual lifestyle when you engage in it. And that's what the church is against. The church is not against same-sex attraction. If you have same-sex attraction, you have same-sex attraction. And the church says we have to respect one another no matter what our sexual attractions might be. But on the other hand, to move into that lifestyle, you look at the depression rates, the anxiety rates, et cetera, et cetera. Suicide rates are 7 times higher than the normal population. And so when you start looking at these statistics, I mean, it'll just shock you as you read through. This is not me. This is the General Archives of General Psychiatry. So just taking a look at their journal articles over the last 15 years. And when you start amassing that data, you look at that and you go, can this be? And then, of course, there's these responses that you get periodically. That's because of the alienation of people with homosexual lifestyle in the culture. They're kind of, you know, set aside there and so forth, and it's the social alienation that's causing these, you know, huge rates of increase in depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and suicide. And the answer is no, because New Zealand, the Netherlands, right, where you have very, very liberal laws, it's the same increase. In other words, it doesn't vary from intolerant cultures to tolerant cultures. So, of course, some of the depression has to be attributable to social marginalization. But by and large, there's very little incidence difference and percentage difference between tolerant and intolerant cultures. So when you really look at it, what's the cause here? Is there something intrinsic to lifestyle itself? And I would say, yes, the evidence points in that direction quite strongly. And so we ought to take that into consideration. Now, some studies say, you know, that the modal range there, of relationships, sexual relationships, is between 100 to 500 for male homosexuals over a lifetime. And you look at that and you go, wait a minute. You know, how can you say this is, you know, emotionally healthy, let alone spiritually healthy? You know, spiritual well-being is being promoted here. I mean, there's something amiss. So all I want to do is just sort of take, you know, it's not just that issue. It's every single issue. I don't care whether it's artificial birth control. I don't care whether it's euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, whether it's abortion, whether it's, gosh, you look at the number of premarital partners. Right, here's a direct correlation: between the number of premarital partners, and you then look at longevity and marital satisfaction.
Right.
The more premarital partners you have, the plummeting rate of longevity. So divorce rates increase, the amount of time in marriage decreases, and the marital satisfaction within the relationship, which of course is causing the divorce rates and the short time marriages, also of course decreases significantly with the increase in. What do we have to do?
Father, this information has been there, just like abortion. The studies that go all the way back to the early days of Roe v. Wade show the connection between women who have abortions. Even let's talk about the physical problems and that they put themselves in harm's way. And obviously, we know innocent life is taken and the woman is greatly affected, but physically, one abortion greatly increases a woman's risk of breast cancer. There is an increased risk of depression. There is problems bonding with children she may have later, the divorce rate, addiction rate, substance abuse. I mean, all you need to do is go to a website like Silent No More Awareness and listen and read the testimonies of women and men who talk about the fact that abortion was not a quick fix. We constantly deny reality. What does your book tell us about this? Because now we have, and it's been prominent for a long time, but even more prominent in this last election, we have politicians claiming to be Catholic and the media calling them devout Catholics, and they walk out of church with their rosaries and they talk about how their faith is important to us and them, and then every time they turn around, they are directly attacking the faith that they say helps them make decisions. They are lying. I don't know what else to say, or just they know they're not aware. I mean, only God knows what's on their heart. But how can you sit there and say you are a quote-unquote devout Catholic and do everything in your power to attack the teachings of the church you say you're a proud member of?
Well, first of all, you know, that's using religion and using Jesus Christ in order to forward a message, a moral message, which is directly opposite of what he held. And if you start doing that, right, you know, being, as it were, duplicitous is the only word for it, if you're duplicitous toward Jesus, you know, you're going to have to, in some sense, give an account of what you are doing, because it's utterly destructive. I mean, this is apostasy is bad enough. But when you actually use the religion to manipulate a moral message that's certainly contrary to his own, and certainly contrary to the church's teaching, and the church is the extension of Jesus Christ according to Jesus' own will. You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld will never prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatsoever you declare bound on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatsoever you declare loosed on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Now, I mean, you can't get more direct than that. And all the attempts to undermine this passage is merely a Matthean redaction. This is just baloney. There is absolute evidence that this passage was around in an Aramaic or Semitic origin, and it actually, you can see the outlines of it in Paul's letter to the Galatians, etc.
Right.
This is not Matthew making something up. This is an Aramaic text that goes back to the time of Jesus and has all kinds of Jesus-isms in it.
But let me ask you, is this one of the tools that the evil one would use, is to use people
yes.
who would claim to be in our own faith, in our own church, claiming on the one hand to be faithful, then on the other hand doing things to undermine the faith on a regular basis and in a big, big way?
Yeah, I don't know if they're they're certainly unwitting disciples of the evil one. Surely they are unwitting disciples because, you know, when you start doing this kind of thing, you know, I mean, you know, it's you're giving a message that clearly is the evil one's agenda, yet, you know, abortion is the sacrament of the evil one, for sure. And you're sitting there lauding this. You're saying, I want to have children killed in 1 second before natural birth. It's still okay. Crush their heads. Dismember them. I mean, honestly, this is like, you cannot be serious that you are representative of Jesus Christ and have the faith, you know, helping you to make decisions. It just cannot, you know, it's obviously some kind of duplicity, and, you know, at least it should be in your mind that it is duplicity. I don't want to say anybody is culpable because that's not my
That's God, right? God understands our hearts.
No,
yeah, that's God's jurisdiction, but it certainly is confusing. And there's a great quote that I use in one of my books from Jim Morrison from The Doors, whoever controls the media controls the mind. And you think about the imagery that the media put out there in terms of people who claim to be religious and walking around with their rosaries or their Bibles, whether they be Protestant or Catholic, and then turning around and supporting so-called same-sex marriage, supporting abortion, promising to codify it in federal law, and then some, promising to pull back the Hyde Amendment and do all kinds of other things, and yet we're supposed to believe that they're faithful members of a Christian church, whether it be Catholic or otherwise. And I think this is what's happening. So many people have been desensitized over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it is just, to me, so obvious, and maybe it's because I'm, you know, trained as a reporter, but you try to put the information out there, and people refuse to believe it.
Yeah, well, because, of course, they have been slowly but surely, I don't want to say brainwashed, but it's like, you know, the Chinese water torture, you know, it's just like you keep hearing it, you keep hearing it, you keep hearing it, and finally, of course, you begin to accede to it. You just don't want to, you know, argue anymore. You just want to get along in the culture. And so you go along to get along, and then you start believing it. And as you believe it, you know, hey, life feels good, and, you know, things are okay, but there are things happening all around you. The culture is clearly breaking down. You know, I mean, the number of marriages is just steeply declined. The number of rapes and sexual assaults is up 5.6 times since 1960. Times, what the, 563% or whatever it is. I mean, it's just, you look at this and you go, something's wrong. Does anybody see something
right.
is wrong? Sexual assaults are doubled and tripled. You know, sexual harassment is through the ceiling. Doesn't anybody see there's something wrong? The millions of deaths caused to these innocent babies. You don't want to say that those babies are human lives?
No, you want to say it's a choice. It's reproductive freedom. It's individual freedom.
Absolutely.
You use these different phrases. And to me, this is all so obvious of where this is coming from. That's why your book is so important. But we only have about a minute left, Father. So at the end of the day, and I always ask this of fellow authors, what do you hope people will gain from this book? Because I think it's so needed right now.
Well, I hope, number one, they wake up. You know, now, of course, this book is, you know, a lot of people are already awake, and that's why they're reading it. So I know I'm saving the saved in some ways. But if they're not, you know, a Catholic who's already sensitized to these issues, I'm hoping they can show some of this. You know, for example, if you got this book and you know, when you shared it with your relatives or your children or something, you might just pick out a few passages and just ask, well, what do you think about this?
Mm-hmm.
And when the third volume comes out, too, with all those statistics, I am praying that people are going to show these statistics to people and go, why do you want a life like that?
Right.
High-end
mm-hmm.
depression, suicides, anxiety. You know, homicide rates among young people are increased up to 22% in 12 years. I mean, you look at this and you go, are you kidding me? Something is horribly wrong. The second thing I would like, is when people see that's horribly wrong, is that, as I already said, to share it with other people and to begin to become disciples of the wake up movement. You've
Amen.
Got the wokes out there. Now
let's be awakened.
Right.
Father, thank you so much. I could do another 2 hours with you. Maybe we'll have you back to talk more about this. The latest book from Father Robert Spitzer, Ignatius Press, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives. We'll be right back.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. Charitymobile.com.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. If you're facing uncertainty with your current healthcare plan, now is the time to join CMF Curo. You can join any time during the year, and CMF Curo offers flexible Catholic healthcare solutions for individuals, families, and employers. CMF Curo is your personal healthcare advocate. Contact them today at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
Join Monica Miller, Janet Smith, Joe Scheidler, and other great speakers for the Red Rose Rescue National Pro-Life Conference. Learn about and become part of this exciting, bold, and effective defense of the unborn. Be there Saturday, December 12th in St. Charles, Missouri. Attend virtually or in person. For all details and to register, see RedRoseRescue.com, RedRoseRescue.com.
So appreciate Father Robert Spitzer, who's very, very busy, of course, spending more time with us this morning on Catholic Connection. I just could not let him go. We're working on rescheduling Julie and Greg, and I just made this decision on the fly because he's so good. Check out the book, Christ versus Satan in Our Daily Lives, from Ignatius Press. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll go to Rome with Joan Lewis and more good stuff as well. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.